Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big-time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
Welcome once again to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally back again. The dynamic duo Sean Boyd alongside for the ride tonight here on show 56.
Man, you know, it feels great to be back. Sean Wally, of course, you know, being absent last week and missing a chance to, you know, to talk with some great guests. And of course, one, I would probably go on a limb as to say both of our idols, one KC, Kevin Calabro, who does play-by-play for ESPN Radio. Man, that was a great show that you put on last week, my friend.
Well, thanks, man. It's definitely tough not having you around, but as they say, the show must go on, and I try to hold it down for you.
Man, well, you did an excellent job, and, you know, it was great, great banter, great sports talk all around. And so, man, we're back here once again together, the Double S Express. What's on the agenda?
Oh, as you know, in the sports world, so many things, so many ways we could go, so many twists and turns. It's almost like, remember when you were a kid and you read those Choose Your Own Adventure novels? That's kind of how this whole sports talk can go, because there's the NBA Finals, there's a new coach in New York, there's NFL happenings with a certain quarterback in San Francisco. Just a lot of ways we could go. So,
yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, I mean, let's start it out. Let's start it out this way. I mean, right now you've mentioned three sports. You've talked about basketball with the NBA Finals going on, and you know, LeBron James did not disappoint the Heat Nation coming back last night with redemption, if you will. Of course, we all know in Game One, LeBron left with cramps due to heat. So go figure that one out. And of course, he took a lot of, you know, criticism over the past couple of days, and he had a chance to lament on that. And of course, he came out and took care of business, 35 points in that game. And, you know, now we're looking at a series that's all knotted up at one.
The Spurs really let one get away, definitely, especially being on their home floor. And typically, that's what you want to do as the away team. You want to get one. Get one on the other team's floor, and the series shifts in your favor.
Yeah, and you know, and that was, you know, you can say that the Spurs let one get away, but we all know that, you know, when you're trying to do something that is unthought of, especially going up 2-0 on an opponent in an NBA final, things start to get a little tight for you, you know, and the game was close, you know, throughout most of the game, but in the end, when it mattered. And, you know, again, you know, you can say that the Spurs gave one away, but I'm just going into the human element of this whole thing. There was a point in the game late where there was a flagrant foul that was called on Mario Chalmers. It was like an elbow to the rib cage of Tony Parker. Tony Parker goes down, and all he has to do is sink these two free throws. He's Mr. Automatic. Misses two of them. That would have gave San Antonio, you know, I believe a 4-point lead, or I believe it was a tie game. And then again, the next time down the court, San Antonio again, Tim Duncan gets fouled, and he has a chance to sink two free throws. They missed four free throws in a row. Now, these are professionals, and these are guys that we're thinking are Mr. Automatic. Both of them are very good at the free throw line, but those free throws wound up being costly for them as the Miami Heat took care of business.
And the Heat did what good and great teams do, take advantage of the miscues by the Spurs down the stretch and at the free throw line.
Yeah, and let's not take anything away from what LeBron James does, not just with the basketball, but what he does as far as keeping his team involved. Now, Chris Bosh had a great game, was involved in, the last 5 points for the Miami Heat. He sank a three-pointer in the corner. He wound up with an assist to D. Wade to put them up by five. But let's not take away again from what LeBron James does. With his basketball IQ, when Chris Bosh made the three-pointer in the corner, LeBron James knew that he had a double team on him, and he kicked it out to Chris Bosh in the corner for the three. Now, there was a time in the Indiana series where that same play was made by LeBron James with the game on the line, just as it was last night. Chris Bosh misses the three-pointer. Now everybody's wondering why LeBron James made the pass, and he should have taken it, being the greatest player in the game. I myself was one of those who thought that. But when you look back on it, when it's late in the game and LeBron James does a drive, he's looking to kick out into the corner. Now, the series before that, in the first round against the New Jersey Nets, the same play arrived to where LeBron kicked it out in the corner to Chris Bosh. Chris Bosh nails the three-pointer to put them up in that Game 5 series and go on to win the series. So, I mean, you know, LeBron is definitely all that in a bag of chips, and we know that. But, you know, I just think that with his basketball IQ, there's no way that the Miami Heat can be beat.
You almost have to wonder, they keep running that play to Bosh in the corner. Why not have a Ray Allen, a Chalmers, even a Rashard Lewis, somebody who's probably better at the three-point line than Chris Bosh?
Yeah, because it's predictable. That's the reason why. You know, you don't want a fast guard that is understanding his defensive position to actually close out quick enough. So what happens is that the Miami Heat rotate around to where the guards are at the top when LeBron James drives. And most of the time, 9 times out of 10, when you have a center, because that's what Chris Bosh is playing, the center position, you have a center that if LeBron is driving, that center is going to help out and collapse into the lane. When that ball is kicked out, most centers don't have the wherewithal to actually close out, and they don't have the speed to close out. In this case, when LeBron kicked it out to Chris Bosh, there was no way in the world that old Tim Duncan was going to close out on Chris Bosh, who was cheating out into the corner. That's why he's wide open. And Chris Bosh is there for a reason. He's there to sink that shot because he's one of the only centers in the league that can actually sink that shot.
Moving forward with the series tied, heading to South Beach, what do you think will happen here in Miami?
Well, you know, so what San Antonio is going to look to do is they're going to look to do the same thing that Miami did in San Antonio, steal one. If they can steal one, then the home court advantage stays with the San Antonio Spurs. I tend to think that, you know, LeBron and company are actually going to go out and win Game 3, which would set up an interesting Game 4. Now, if that scenario arises, then, you know, there's a very good chance that San Antonio will wind up 3-1. If it is 3-1 after Game 4, it's a wrap. The Miami Heat win the championship. They might not win it going back to San Antonio, but they will win it in Game 6 in Miami. Now, most prognosticators say that it's going to be tied going out, you know, going out from Game 4, but, you know, it just depends. If I were San Antonio, I would look to steal the first home game, but I just don't see that. I see Miami winning game three. And if that's the case, it's checkmate.
Yeah, it definitely would be in San Antonio's favor to get Game 3. If not, they definitely need Game 4. That they need one of the first two in Miami, or else they're staring the barrel of the gun down 3-1.
Yeah, and it just looks like Miami is the healthier team, even though when you look at the age limit on each of the teams, I believe that San Antonio is slightly older, like by a half a year when you go through the whole average of the team. But when you talk about these top players, when you're looking at LeBron, you're looking at D-Wade, I know he's a little bit older, but Chris Bosh, you know, still younger. You know, it just seems like the top part of that roster for the Miami Heat is just a little bit stronger, a little bit faster, and once they start to get the confidence as the series goes on, it could be dangerous for the San Antonio Spurs.
Heading up the East Coast to New York City, home of the Knicks, rumors out there that there's a new coach in Madison Square Garden, and that will be Derek Fisher.
Yeah, you know, you have to say congratulations to Derek Fisher on getting the new coaching job. And you know, you'd have to say that this is also predicated on, Jason Kidd getting the head coaching job in New Jersey, for teams to actually take a chance on, you know, a player that is just retired and now getting the head coaching job. You know, it kind of leads you to wonder at one point, the New York Knicks were looking at a Steve Kerr as a head coach, and they were looking at, you know, a couple of other coaching candidates that had a little more experience. It makes you wonder why they went this route. But of course, like I said, you know, Jason Kidd led the New Jersey Nets to their first playoff in his first year, and I'm sorry, led them to the playoffs in his first year, and so that might be a youth movement that's going on up there in the Northeast.
Let's head on out to the Papa John's Tri-Cities hotline and welcome in big-time guest number one tonight from the Bay Area, and that is sports writer Paul Gackle, GackleReport.com. What's going on, Paul?
I'm not doing too bad. I just hit a really nice 3-wood onto the green. I'm going to be putting for eagle on a par 5.
Well, man, thanks for taking the time out from that, man. If I were you, I would stay out there on the green and knock her in.
Sometimes you got to step away from it a little bit, take your mind off it, take the pressure off a little bit. I'll be just fine.
Hey, man, something tells me you're just going to have a lot of these guys that are behind you just play on through. Just go ahead and play through.
Exactly. Just wave them through.
Oh, man. So, hey, Paul, thanks again for taking the time out here. And there are some great things going on in the Bay this past week. And one that we're talking about is a huge signing for one Colin Kaepernick getting the big purse from the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, you know, the 49ers, it looks like they're going to get a pretty good deal in this, too, because only $13 million or so guaranteed. They're going to have some space to sign some other players. And you know what? If it turns out the cap doesn't develop quite as much as they like over the next few years, they could cut them at any time. So pretty good deal for the 49ers, I'd say.
Yeah, so what does this do for the confidence level for Colin Kaepernick? I know that he was looking for this type of a contract, one that shows that the organization definitely believes in him. Now, of course, they were one game away from the Super Bowl last year. Do you think this is something that can put them over the top and get the 49ers into the Super Bowl?
Well, it's all going to depend on what he does on the field. You know, at the end of the day, obviously has this just awesome skills. They're $100 million skills, that arm, his leg, and he's as explosive as anybody in football. And then there were some games last year where it looked like defenses were able to cause some confusion, and he looks like he still needs a little bit of work on his reads and his progressions and things like that, like any quarterback who's, only started 23 regular season games or something like that. So, it's all going to depend on how he progresses, but with those tools and then an extra season under his belt, there's a lot of pluses, a lot of positives.
Paul, sticking with the 49ers for a minute, do you think that things will harmonize between Coach Harbaugh and GM Trent Baalke there in Santa Clara to where that won't be an issue with them butting heads?
Well, I don't know. I mean, with Jim Harbaugh, it's tough to say that with any type of certainty because this is a guy, if you talk to John Harbaugh, you know, these guys, they jumped all over the country growing up. Their dad was a coach all over the place. And it sounds like Jim, you know, by the time they left the town, he had worn out his welcome and left enemies anywhere. So, you know, if I had to wager my salary on Jim Harbaugh getting along with the other kids in the sandbox, I probably wouldn't. Having said that, to what extent does that actually leak out and impact the team's performance on the field? I don't think it really does that much. So at the end of the day, is it going to cost the 49ers wins and a chance at the Super Bowl because Harbaugh and Baalke don't get along? I'd say not. But, he's an abrasive guy. I would expect that they're not going to, inviting each other over for Thanksgiving necessarily.
The 49ers getting wide receiver Stevie Johnson in the mix now. Another weapon for that already scary offense. Seems like they're gunning for Seattle and trying to go after that Legion of Boom secondary.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that was a part. We talked about some of Colin Kaepernick's struggles last year, namely the Indianapolis Colts game early in the season at home when the Carolina Panthers came into Candlestick about halfway through the season. And, of course, when they hooked up with Seattle. But at that time early in the season, Michael Crabtree was hurt. So, you know, Kaepernick really didn't have a lot to work with other than Vernon Davis. Anquan Boldin's a great possession receiver, but he's not a guy who's going to necessarily break free on his explosiveness alone. So now you're looking at this. You know, you saw the difference when Michael Crabtree came back late in the season in that game where they beat the Seahawks at Candlestick, and then they were a different team in the playoffs if it wasn't for an interception in the last minute. You know, the 49ers might have hoisted the Lombardi Trophy. So adding Stevie Johnson, just a veteran receiver, into the mix, that's really interesting. Could give defenses a lot of fits when you have Kaepernick's legs to worry about. They still have one of the biggest offensive lines in football. You have, you know, the backfield that they have. I'm really interested to see how Lattimore fixes and goes in the mix. So if everybody can stay healthy and you have to deal with Vernon Davis, Crabtree, and Stevie Johnson, wow, their offense could be really explosive.
Paul Gekel joining us on the double with the Double S Express. And, yeah, you know, I have to agree with you, Paul. I think that San Francisco is doing exactly what it needs to do. There's, you know, their defensive side of the ball, you know, though it needs some help at the corners, I believe that the offensive side needed just a little more of an adjustment. And when you're talking about adding a receiver, an extra receiver in the slot that can get open and allow Vernon Davis to get open on the other side of the slot. And then with the running backs as well, you know, you mentioned Marcus Lattimore. That's a huge X factor, if you will, because we don't know what Marcus can do. I mean, this is his second year out of South Carolina, coming off some big injuries. We haven't heard too much in the camps unless you have some information for us. You know, what's going on with Marcus? Is he hitting the right progressions?
Well, we don't really know yet, but, everything we know about these ACL injuries, the nice thing about Lattimore is they basically were able to, you know, to grab him, what was it, the fourth or fifth round, and end up what they called redshirting him last season. So right. It's not an ACL situation like Robert Griffin III where you're rushing this kid back and he's a rookie and you don't know what to expect. But, I mean, just what I saw from Lattimore when he was actually on the field in college football, he looked almost like as ready a pro quarterback as a running back since maybe AP. I mean, he just really looked like he had the full package. And, you know, despite the knee injuries, I don't think it's what it was in the old days where you're a little worried. You don't know if he's going to come back 100%. I think they figured this thing out just like Tommy John surgery. And with all that time to rest, and you're not asking him to come in and be a 1,000-yard rusher and carry the team right off the bat. So with the holes that they can create and thinking of him, you know, coming in and giving Gore a breather, I think, you know, really interesting to see how that part of the, you know, how that storyline develops, because he could be really something special. And you know, it's Harbaugh football. Harbaugh, you know, it's been the same since he was at Stanford. He likes to get behind that big line and pound the football. And so they're looking pretty good for the future.
Now, switching to the other side of the bay, the Oakland Raiders, starting their OTAs, and of course the big talk with Matt Schaub being the quarterback at the helm. There's been a couple of murmurs here over the past few days that David Carr is actually stepping up and looking pretty good here in training.
Yeah, that's the word out of it. You know, and I you know, I never know what to make too much of any when you're playing football in shorts, you know.
Right. So exactly.
So I mean, we're not even in July where they put the pads on yet, but you know, they're definitely hoping that that kid can come along. You know, Schaub is, I guess it's a nice acquisition. I don't know, to think of a guy who gets run out of town for a team that had Super Bowl aspirations. You know, at the end of the day, it seems like just another Carson Palmer situation. And the Raiders, I mean, they just have a brutal schedule because they play the NFC West in the cross-conference games. And, they have a rough season ahead. And, you know, the AFC West is really getting a lot better with the Chargers look like a legitimate team. You know, obviously the Broncos and the Chiefs with Alex Smith and Andy Reid. So I think they're going to have a lot of losses, although I do expect them to actually put a better product out on the field. I don't know if it's going to translate into wins and losses this season.
Yeah, you're talking about, you know, the play. Of course, you know, the Raiders playing against the NFC West. I believe that gives them the toughest record in the NFL next year. Am I correct?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Man.
So, you know, good luck.
Yeah.
Paul Gekel of GekelReport.com joining us. You can follow him on Twitter at GekelReport. Paul, switching gears there in the Bay to the Golden State Warriors. They have a new head coach with Steve Kerr in the mix, and that was a little shaky how that all went down.
Yeah, it was really interesting. I mean, at first it seemed just preposterous that they would send Mark Jackson packing, considering, you know, back-to-back 50-win seasons for the first time in, I think, 22 years. And, you know, it looked like this team was on the up and up, and all of a sudden he's out, you know, almost immediately after they got bounced from the playoffs. They go after Stan Van Gundy, and were trying to bring him in, and that didn't happen. And all of a sudden, the thing was really looking like a mess. They were able to go down there and woo Steve Kerr away from Phil Jackson, which is pretty surprising. So, interesting story in Golden State. I mean, that's understating it.
How do you think it all play out with the players? Do you think everything will mesh and they'll figure it out and just start to play basketball once we get around to summer camps and then preseason for the NBA? Or do you think there might still be some players that kind of don't really like the fact that Mark Jackson is not their coach?
Well, they were definitely really, really loyal to Mark Jackson. But at the end of the day, you look in that locker room and you have a bunch of professionals. Steph Curry is, you know, his dad. He's a player's son. Klay Thompson's a player's son. Andrew Bogut's a professional. So I don't really see there being a huge problem. Of course, they like Mark Jackson, but at the end of the day, you know, professional athletes just want to win. And if it, you know, if Steve Kerr comes in here, I don't know if this is going to pan, how it's going to pan out in terms of wins and losses, if they're going to go further, what the final product is going to be. But I do know that their offense will get a little more sophisticated with a lot more movement in it. Steve Kerr obviously coming from Phil Jackson and Greg Popovich, you know, two of the best ball movement coaches there are in the game. And, you know, Mark Jackson, a lot of time the Warriors, their offense looked a lot like those Knicks teams that Mark Jackson played on, you know, back in the 90s, a lot of ISO. And, you know, they won games because, they, you know, he got the best out of them on the defensive end. The Warriors went from being one of the worst defensive teams in the NBA to, you know, middle of the pack to top five by his final season. So, you know, it'll really be interesting. Can Steve Kerr motivate the guys to get back on defense the way Mark Jackson did? That's the question. But I definitely think there's going to be a lot more ball movement. You're going to see a better offensive team.
Paul Gackel joining us, taking the time out from the links to join us in talking Bay Area sports. And, you know, I tend to agree with you, Paul, as far as the Warriors are concerned. I just think it's a work in progress. And, you know, there's going to be that mix of the humanistic side along with the professionalism side. But, you know, I think the Warriors might take a step back before they move forward. But they're definitely going to move forward here in the years to come, no doubt about it. I think Steve Kerr does bring that complex offense that will allow them to mix it up a little bit. And then if they have to ISO at certain points, it'll give them that variety. But, you know, I know that fans out here in the Bay are kind of scratching their heads because, you know, how can you do something? How can you let go of a coach after 51 wins? And, you know, what are we thinking about here? But, yeah, I do in the long run think that Steve Kerr might be a good option for him.
Well, I think when they first let go of Mark Jackson, you know, everybody was kind of freaking out. How can you let go of this guy? But I do think that when they were able to go persuade Steve Kerr at the end of the day and they got their guy and they stole him away from Phil and they stole him away from the Knicks. And now Mark Jackson, you know, the Knicks job's vacant, the Lakers job's vacant, and Mark Jackson doesn't seem to be getting a sniff from those guys. So now you go, huh, maybe there's more to this. There is also, you know, whisperings, one story, and, you know, it's an unidentified source. You never know what to make of that, was that there might have been some interest in Jason Collins last summer, and Mark Jackson said, you know, not my locker room, referring to his homosexuality, which would have been a big problem. So, you know, there's always more to meet the eye.
Yeah, you know, you kind of hear these backdoor rumors that come out. And so, you know, and like you're saying, nobody is actually barking up the tree of Mark Jackson. I actually tend to like him as a commentator. I think he does a great job there. I think he did a good job as a coach. And so, you know, I just think that there's a great future for him as well.
You'd think. I mean, everybody loved him. And that's why it was so weird when, you know, he got panned like that. And most of the sentiment at first, and if you read all a lot of the columnists here in the Bay Area, a lot of the sentiment was, you know, is Joe Lacob going to be the next Al Davis, the meddling owner? Who, you know, drive, you know, great people away. But it's really interesting that Mark Jackson isn't getting any interest from these other teams, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's very interesting. And so, you know, it kind of leads you to believe that maybe there is a little bit of truth to it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you just, at some point you'd think he'd surface again. A guy like that who, you know, back-to-back 50-win seasons on a franchise that was just dismal for so long.
Yeah.
I think he'd come up sooner or later.
Now, shifting gears here, now we're going to the Rodney Dangerfields of Major League Baseball. Of course, we have two teams in the Bay, San Francisco Giants, doing a tremendous job with the best record in Major Leagues of 42-21. But that no respect team, the Oakland A's, 39-24, they just keep moving along and doing what they need to do. Winners of 7 of 10. 4.5 games up on the Anaheim Angels, and of course they've got a series starting with the Angels tonight. But there was an interesting turn of events that happened last night with Manny Machado in the Orioles with a bat going down the third base line. Kind of tell us what was going on there.
Well, you know, Donaldson applied a tag on Machado. Machado was going second to third on Friday night. He tagged him. Machado ended up trying to avoid it a little bit, and he ended up falling over, and it seemed like he was embarrassed or something. I don't know exactly what the deal was, but he got up into Donaldson's faces. Everybody came out, you know, bit of a brouhaha, no punches thrown. And then yesterday, first he hits Derek Norris in the head with one of his backswing, doesn't apologize or anything like that. Then, you know, the A's are coming inside on him a little bit, and he throws the bat down at Donaldson. Really bizarre behavior from Machado, and I think he's probably going to get a suspension because you can't really use the bat as a weapon. That's where you draw the line. You know what? If you have a problem about them coming inside, you know, I'm kind of old-fashioned in this regard, and I say, you know what, go out there and throw some punches in if you have that big of a problem with it. Don't be a wimp and sit in the batter's box and use your bat as a weapon throwing it out there. Like, come on, man.
Definitely.
Go throw some blows.
Now, Paul, one of your favorite sports, or probably your favorite sport, is hockey, being a Canadian guy. Now, we're into the Stanley Cup Finals, a couple great overtime games, and the Kings are up on the Rangers, and Game 3 is happening right now. Now, I saw on your website, GackleReport.com, you almost had a dream or a fantasy article to where you're saying, let's get an NHL team in San Francisco. Do you think that could happen before Seattle might happen?
Well, I'm really confused as to why the NHL hasn't jumped in and gone after Seattle since the Sonics have been gone. You know, take hold of that market. And I'm just sort of curious, you know, if the NBA will get back there and you'll really miss your chance to really get into people's hearts. I would say Seattle probably first, because I know that that's on everybody's list. And my little, it was a little bit of a fantasy thinking San Francisco. But the idea is just that the Warriors are getting that new arena down there, not too far from AT&T Park where the Giants play, pretty close to the waterfront in a hip, happening little neighborhood. And I'm thinking, you know, why not put an NHL team there? Because the San Jose Sharks, they're so grounded down there in the South Bay in Silicon Valley, you know, which is a completely different world. You know, there aren't a lot of people who are, you know, going to be, you know, there's some hockey fans from San Francisco that definitely go down to San Jose, but if you know anything about that, 101, that's just a huge traffic corridor. It's a nightmare. And I think San Francisco is sort of a hip, eclectic city. I mean, when they have the World Cup games, they show them outside for, you know, right outside Civic Center, right outside City Hall. They got like 10,000 people there. People have a diverse interest in San Francisco, and I think hockey would really work, you know, in that neighborhood, in the new arena. I think it's something definitely worth looking into.
Paul Gackle, thanks so much for your time tonight. You can check out his articles, his new podcast, doing a great job there, GackleReport.com, as well as the 2014 Fantasy U.S. Open Challenge. Check it out at GackleReport.com. Thanks for your time, Paul.
You definitely want to get into that, and let me go knock down the seagull putt now.
Yeah, man, go ahead and knock that one down for the Double S Express, man. Thanks for being on.
All right, talk to you guys later.
All right.
Just a great insight from Paul Gackle, as always, on all things Bay Area. Sean Boyd.
Yeah, man. You know, he was talking about that team, NHL team coming to San Francisco. And you know, that would be ideal, especially with a new arena being built for the Golden State Warriors. But, man, I know that Seattle is definitely in the bidding for that as well. When we come back, we're going to take a quick break. We'll talk a little bit more of the AL West. We didn't get a chance to talk about too much of it with Paul, but we'll talk a little bit more about that. And we'll talk about one crazy owner of a great, great horse in California Chrome. You keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the double.
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400. The safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com.
Let's get back to great sports talk with big-time guests on the double with the Double S Express.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. And, man, you know, Sean, that was Nick Beckman bringing us back into the show. And we got to send a happy birthday shout-out to our buddy Nick Beckman in the Seattle Puyallup 253-206 Puget Sound area.
Yeah, Nick is, you know, he is PA announcing extraordinaire. And so, you know, it's cool to have people like that, you know, giving their time and their efforts to the Double S Express, man. And happy birthday, Nick Beckman.
And of course, we had Paul Gackel as our first guest tonight, big time guest number one, GackelReport.com. And you're going to want to definitely stay tuned. Later in the hour, we will have big time guest number two, Mike Sando of ESPN.com, the NFL writer. You'll want to stick around for that.
Man, I'm looking forward to talking with Mike. Of course, his roots go all the way back to the Tacoma News Tribune, and it's great to see that he is doing some great things with ESPN.com and talking all things NFL.
So, Sean, there was a chance at a Triple Crown shot in the world of horse racing this past weekend for California Chrome.
Man, you know, who would have thought that there would have been this much drama? I mean, it's enough to have a horse that is in contention to winning the Triple Crown, you know, winning the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness, and I'm forgetting the third one. Help me out. The Belmont. Thank you. And, you know, California Chrome had the chance to do that up in New York and missed out on it. But the biggest drama was the owner of California Chrome coming out, and you know, and it sounded like sour grapes, but you know, at the same time, Sean Wally, I think there's a little bit of validity to what was going on. And what I mean by that is that there were a couple of horses that came in there that wound up finishing ahead of California Chrome that were capable of winning the Triple Crown, but seemed like they were sandbagged in order to beat California Chrome in the end. But you know, it just looked like the owner flipped, meaning California Chrome's owner came out and, you know, was crying foul and crying cheat and this, that, and the other. And it just wasn't a good look.
Yeah, he definitely got caught up in the emotion. And as he tried to retract and apologize today, you know, he got caught up in the emotion and he said he really wanted the horse to win, not for himself, but for the American people, for fans of horse racing. And yeah, that's all good and well, but as you said, it wasn't a good look for him. It wasn't in a good light of the things he was saying, and he was even, his wife was trying to, you know, reel him in, and that didn't work on live TV all over the world. And, you know, Sunday, he still stayed with his stance of those horses were rested, that's not fair. And then today, he finally had a change of heart.
Yeah, you know, I'm not saying what he did was right, because of course, you know, right now it is what it is. What said was said. But I mean, when you look at the longevity of a horse, I believe that they only get one shot at this. Horses only last so long as far as getting this opportunity to do something like this, and then you have to breed another horse. So, you know, I can understand where his emotions got the best of him, because this was that one shot. But yeah, when you look at it in hindsight and you take a deep breath and it's like, man, you know, I really kind of, you know, went out on a limb and stunk it up. But, you know, what do you do? I can't say that I wouldn't have done something like that. I mean, especially putting that time, that effort, and that energy, that money into something like this. You just hope that you say the right things and do the right things in the end. And it just didn't happen in this case.
It's definitely a learning experience for everybody involved, especially for the owner of California Chrome. Yeah.
And especially when you're looking at, you know, when you think of horse racing, you think of the upper echelon, the, you know, the people that handle themselves with the most professionalism, and there's a, you know, this grand stage that's put together, kind of a regalness, if you will. And then this happens, it just, you know, it sours it up a little bit.
Moving back to baseball, the AL West, things are going well in Oakland, in Seattle, and also down there in Anaheim with the Angels, who the A's are battling right now, starting off a series with the Angels are the Athletics. And as I said, things are going well for those three teams in the AL West, especially here in June. The A's 5-2 to start off the month. The Mariners 6-1. It might be a fun summer in the AL West.
Yeah, so you're looking at three teams that are separated five games, with Seattle being in third place in the AL West. But even more importantly than that, the strength of the AL West, what you're looking at is you're looking at Seattle as the fourth best team in the American League. And so, you know, you're starting to see some strides here. You're starting to see Seattle taking care of business, as we talk about the Mariners right now, 20-14 on the road, which is tremendous. Not doing too well at home, 14-15, but over the last 10 games, they're 8-2. It's just unfortunate for the Mariners right now that the Oakland A's are standing pat and winning seven of their last 10. And, you know, Oakland's taking care of business on both at home and on the road.
It's going to be interesting to see if Seattle can finally get some home cooking going. You would think Safeco Field would be a friendly place for them. It's a pitcher's park and, you know, a great place for Felix and Iwakuma and the staff to do well at. But for some reason, they just haven't found their stride at Safeco Field. And the majority, 14 games out of the next 24 are in Seattle for the Mariners. So it'll be interesting to see if they can get over that hump in Safeco Field.
Yeah. Well, it's a good problem to have, Sean. I mean, if you're under 500 at home right now, you know, and only being about five games out from, you know, the lead, well, then there's room for improvement. Of course, you know, Seattle did what they needed to do in an early game today, beating, you know, the Tampa Bay Devil Rays 3-0. And, you know, Robinson Cano had a great game today, setting a spark to start off, you know, their run score. And, of course, the game prior to that, it was 0-0 going into the ninth last night. And then the Mariners whip off five runs. So, you know, it showing that they can score in droves all at once. And so, you know, those are good signs. Those are good signs for the Mariners. I just don't see them right now taking the AL West. I do see them, though, with them being the fourth best team in the American League as we speak, I do see them vying for a wild card position if they actually, you know, can continue to get better and right the ship.
And hey, all Mariner fans will take that, because that means one thing: the postseason, something that has not been seen in Seattle Mariner land since 2001.
Yeah, you know, and you had mentioned the two great pitchers that the Mariners have in Hasekawa, and with King Felix having 15 Ks the two games prior. And, you know, today they get a victory, you know, from, you know, an unsuspected pitcher. And, you know, and I'm thinking, man, these guys are definitely doing what they need to do to solidify themselves as a team that's in contention.
Interesting note so far for the Mariners in this 2014 season. They've had the fourth toughest schedule. So things haven't been extremely easy for them on the injury front or the schedule front. And now we'll see if, you know, getting a pitcher or two back healthy can help them along with some home cooking over the summer to whether or not they can catch the Angels, catch the A's, and we can have an actual pennant race here as we go into the dog days of summer.
Yeah, and, you know, they're doing just that. When you're talking about, you know, the top players in the AL, you know, you have Robin Cano that is second in batting average at .330. If they can get some more players into that top five, then they will start to become that contender that we're talking about. Of course, King Felix is third in AL wins. He's got 8. And, you know, Felix also has a 2.39 ERA. But now when you're talking about, you know, the team that I'd mentioned, you know, the Rodney Dangerfield of baseball in the Oakland A's, I mean, this team is, you know, rock solid. You've got, you know, in home runs, Josh Donaldson and Brandon Moss at 4 and 5 in the AL with 17 and 16 home runs, respectively. You also have, when runs batted in, you've got Brandon Moss and Josh Donaldson doing their thing there. And then in pitching, Scott Kazmir with a better ERA than King Felix as we speak with a 2.20. You know, these are not luck, and this isn't by chance. This is a solid baseball team year in and year out, and they continue to reload, and they continue to do what they need to do to prove to people that they are one of the best teams in the majors.
And yeah, there in Oakland, Brandon Moss, first baseman with 53 RBIs already, and we're not even halfway through. And then things are just going so well down in Oakland that they put out, one of the sports websites put out a probability to make the postseason. The A's were at 98%.
Yeah, you know, but the other crazy thing is that there are three other teams in front of them, which, you know, I understand. Of course, one of them being the San Francisco Giants. And that's one thing, Sean Wally, with you being a Mariners fan, what in the world is going on with Michael Morse in this rejuvenation over there in San Francisco? I mean, you're looking at 13 home runs. He's got 42 batted in. And, you know, he is looking like a beast down there in the Bay.
It comes down to one word, and that would be health. As far as I know, here in 2014, he's been healthy, and that's showing in his consistency and his stats.
Yeah, man, I mean, every time he steps up to the plate, and, you know, I'm getting a chance to see firsthand what could have been in Seattle, and you're talking about a presence that is, you know, very intimidating. I think he stands at about 6'5", 6'6", am I correct? Is he about that tall?
Yeah, 6'5", I believe, is right, 6'4", 6'5", in that area.
And, you know, I mean, and he just hovers over that plate, and when that ball comes over the plate, his swing is just so powerful that, you know, you can't help but say, wow, this guy definitely is grade A. And so, you know, I mean, tough for Seattle, you know, great pickup for San Francisco. And you know, if you let the Giants tell it, they'll probably say they knew it all along. But, man, I don't think that they really expected this type of play from Michael Morse.
Well, you can just hope that you can find a player's potential and he can stay healthy and get in a groove and get back to doing some of the things he had done in the past. And he showed glimpses of it last season in Seattle, but he was never healthy long enough to show it for an extended period of time.
Yeah, most definitely. And, you know, I mean, the Giants are just, you know, they're moving right along, and they've got some great players doing some great things. And, you know, they're looking like the team to beat in the major leagues. And, you know, of course, I would be excited to, you know, see a Bay Area World Series once again, you know, and that's something that's kind of murmuring around here.
Just minus the earthquake, I hope.
Yes. Please. Yeah, minus the earthquake.
Well, Sean, a big sport around the world. The World Cup 2014 begins this week in Brazil. The first game is Thursday. And then, of course, here in the USA, the Americans will play Monday against Ghana.
Man, and it is an exciting time. And, you know, for those of you who have been watching soccer over the past week and some of these exhibition games, I mean, America, get ready. This should be an exciting, exciting World Cup. You know, minus Brandon Donovan, of course, you know, which, you know, it's a huge question mark on why he isn't playing. But, you know, Landon Donovan, I'm sorry, I said Brandon Donovan, Landon Donovan. But, you know, get excited for this. Get behind your country. And, you know, this should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's definitely the world sport, and it's catching on notoriety here in the US of A, of course, with MLS bringing in stronger players from around the world and getting more TV deals and sponsorships. So it should be fun to see which team can come out on top World Cup 2014.
Let's go USA.
Well, Sean, we touched on it with big time guest number one, Paul Gackel, and that was the Stanley Cup Finals. And you can almost put a fork in the New York Rangers. The Kings of LA have taken game three, 3-0, and that is what the series sits at. 3-0 Kings. One more win, and they hoist the cup.
Yeah, you know, you're exactly right in putting a fork in. You know, I was just down in LA this past weekend, and there is a lot of excitement about these Kings doing just that. And so, you know, you almost forget when you're down there in Los Angeles that they have, you know, a professional hockey team. But, you know, but you see the billboards and you see the excitement that, you know, the LA King flags on the cars and everything. And so, you know, let's look to see this this Stanley Cup come back to LA.
Hey, Sean, before we get to a break and then welcome in Mike Sando of ESPN.com as our big time guest here in a few moments. We didn't get to touch on it last week because you weren't able to be on the show, but you had the opportunity to get back on the air with the NFHS Network and do some analyst duties for track and field high school championships.
Yeah, so I had the honor of calling the CIF San Joaquin Masters Track and Field Championship. Say that three times fast. But it was held at Elk Grove High School. And of course, in Elk Grove, California, and it did not disappoint. There are some great, great athletes that came about. And, you know, of course, every time I call track and field, it brings back fond memories. And, you know, it was just great all around to see these young talents that are looking to hoist themselves to the next level. And a lot of these track and field athletes aren't just track and field specialists. They also do other sports such as basketball and football. And, you know, it was just good. It was just good to see that individual track and field atmosphere woven into team totals. And, you know, again, it was fun and I enjoyed it.
So you've had a chance to work a handful of sports for the NFHS Network. Do you have a preference on, you know, you probably obviously have an affinity for track and field because that's what you were great at when you were a high school and college athlete. Yet you had the chance to call football, basketball, any of them set higher than the other?
You know, right now I would have to say no. I'm enjoying the aspects of calling, you know, just numerous sports. And of course, I called track and field. I had the chance to call cross country, also, you know, football and basketball. And so, you know, I'm just enjoying the moment, you know, getting a chance to, you know, to extend and express my mind and do some research and learn about these other sports. And so, yeah, I'm just enjoying the moment.
Great work there being done by Sean Boyd all over the place, especially here on the Double with the Double S Express. And you're going to want to keep it locked. When we return, you won't want to miss big time guest number two, ESPN.com football writer Mike Sando. Stick around on the Double with the Double S Express.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Guys, are you having trouble getting to sleep? Would you like to know the secret to getting a great night's sleep every night? Bruce Feeney discovered this secret, a new, all-natural sleep aid for men. Listen to what he says about it.
Hey, you know, I tried a product recently called Love to Sleep. It was a great product, helped me a lot. Took 3 or 4 days for it to start working in my system, and I fell asleep very quickly and got up rested. And if I got up during the middle of the night, I ended up coming back to bed and fell right back to sleep. I would recommend it to all my friends.
If you, too, would love to get a good night's sleep every night and wake up feeling great in the morning, try Love to Sleep, the new sleep aid for men. Your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed. And because Love to Sleep is all natural, it's completely safe with no side effects or risk of dependency. Go to lovetosleep.com. That's lovetosleep.com.
Let's get back to great sports talk with big-time guests on the double with the Double S Express.
On the double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. And let's go right back out to the Papa John's Tri-Cities phone lines and welcome in big-time guest number two tonight, Mike Sando, joining us, the NFL writer for ESPN.com. How's it going, Mike?
Doing great. How are you guys doing?
Great. Hey, Mike, you know, let's get right into it. Of course, the NFC West is the topic of choice. Of course, the Seattle Seahawks, the Super Bowl champions, coming into this next season. But there is one huge contract that we should talk about, and that is of San Francisco 49er Colin Kaepernick. 6-year deal, $121 million, I believe, with $60 million guaranteed. Give us your intake on that one.
Yeah, well, it's actually $13 million fully guaranteed at signing. And so a lot of the guarantees nowadays, not just for Colin, but for players throughout the league, are contingent on the player being on the roster at certain points. So the 49ers, you know, were willing to give Kaepernick $13 million. He was only going to make one this year, so it's a big raise for him. He gets some security. But they also can get out of this deal, you know, after just about every year without, you know, having a horrible salary cap situation. So it's kind of a nice structural contract for them. Now, if Colin does his part and plays well, he's going to get a lot of that $120-whatever million. But it seemed like, you know, a pretty reasonable deal from the team standpoint, if you believe Colin Kaepernick is someone you can win a Super Bowl with, which, you know, I think they do.
Now, with, you know, of course, that puts him as one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL. Of course, you have Russell Wilson, the Super Bowl champion for the Seattle Seahawks, kind of chomping at the bit. Obviously, this is a win-win all around for quarterbacks, especially in their contract years moving forward.
It is, and I think, you know, with the 49ers, they've been very reluctant to pay even Jim Harbaugh the top dollar because they haven't won a Super Bowl. Well, in Russell Wilson's case, he's won a Super Bowl. And, yeah, you can argue that they were a defensive team that ran the ball and didn't ask as much from him as some teams ask from their quarterbacks, but he's still going to be a Super Bowl-winning quarterback. Who knows what he does this next year, maybe even two-time. And he's a little bit of the face of the franchise. I mean, he's a very high-profile player and somebody they're obviously going to want to keep around. So I think he's going to get a deal that has more fully guaranteed money than Colin Kaepernick got, because the 49ers were just saying, hey, you haven't won the Super Bowl yet. You haven't been a Pro Bowl type quarterback. So, you know, we're going to put some hedge our bets a little bit. Whereas Seattle can't say that with Russell. He's already done those things.
Now, Mike, with the NFC West, it's been the 49ers and the Seahawks the last handful of years at the top of the division. Now it seems like the Rams and especially the Cardinals are creeping even closer to make parity in the NFC West the way it's going.
Yeah, you know, I think the big deal in St. Louis is what Sam Bradford going to do. Is he going to be healthy? Because they have a phenomenal defensive line. I think they have some decent, you know, young receivers that they like. Their offensive line is going to be better. They've got good running backs now, it looks like, after drafting Trey Mason, Zach Stacy coming off a good year. They just have to have Bradford. And in the Cardinals' case, I think a lot of the focus is going to be on the offense, too, because, you know, the defense is going to be good again, but they lost Darrell Washington to a suspension. Carlos Daniel left. Those were their two best linebackers. And, you know, quietly, a lot of people didn't know this, but, you know, the last half of last season, their offense was one of the 8 or 10 best in the league in terms of its production. And I think they need that to continue, which it should, because Bruce Arians is an offensive coach. People started to pick up the system late in the year. I think that side of the ball is going to be critical for them and should help them be competitive again.
Do you think that Carson Palmer has enough left to help get those Cardinals over the hump there in Arizona?
You know, I don't know about that, because over the hump, it's a very high hump in the NFC West. You know, it's not just talking about win 9 or 10 games and you're in. You know, they were 10-6 last year and didn't make the playoffs. We could easily see something like that happen again. I think the likelihood is they could be in that 8-9 win range and probably not good enough. And Carson Palmer's getting up there in age. I was encouraged by what I saw late in the year. Now, he had one really bad game, really bad half at Seattle, threw 3 interceptions, but for the most part in the second half of the year, he was just a much, much better quarterback, and his numbers were right up there with just about any quarterback in the league. And like I said, people didn't really realize that, because you look at the numbers for the whole season. But the second half of that year, he was a different guy, and I think there is reasonable expectation that they'll get that out of him again this year. Beyond that, I mean, it's really year to year with a player that old.
Mike Zando, kind enough to join us here on the Double with the Double S Express. And Mike, in one of your recent articles, you talked about expansion in the NFL. And so we're kind of talking along the lines of the Cardinals right now being a team that is up and coming. And they're trying to tweak some things. You're mentioning in your article that this would benefit a team like the Cardinals as far as an expansion. And explain why.
Yeah, we're talking about expanding the playoffs. There's 12 teams that get in now, 6 from each conference, and the league would like to go 7 in each conference. So, you know, I think the natural reaction to that is, you know, it's just another example of the league trying to make an extra buck, maybe at the expense of the product, because it's just logical that if you add teams that, you know, the quality of the pool is going to be diluted. But what I did was just looked at the quality of the 7th seeds. I went back to 2002, which was the first year of realignment into the 4-team divisions. And really those 7th seeds, especially lately, have been about like the 4th seeds. You know, the 4th seed is the worst division winner. You're guaranteed a playoff spot, but you're not always having the best. You know, you don't always have one of the top 4 records in the conference. Well, those 7th seeds since 2002, there's never been a losing team. I think 18 of the 24 have had winning records. There's been, you know, double-digit win teams, and they've averaged, since 2008, those 7 seeds have averaged the same number of wins as the 4 seeds, 9.2. So, to me, why not let some of those teams in? Like Arizona, we agree last season that was a team that could have really livened up the playoff field. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so, you know, when you're talking about it, you know, this playoff expansion, of course, it's going to increase the – you know, the percentage of it sounds like the percentage of viewers, you believe, and the revenue is something that would benefit the NFL as well.
Yeah, and then, of course, you know, if a bad team makes it in, everyone will say, oh, this is the downside. But I just, like I said, I looked at the history. It really hasn't happened yet. So, you know, until it does, let's not pretend like it would let a bunch of losing teams in.
Now, Mike, there's a lot of good things going on down in Santa Clara with the new stadium for the 49ers, yet can the head coach and GM get along to make everything cohesive in 2014 for the 49ers?
Not everyone's convinced. You know, they haven't done a contract for Harbaugh yet. Trent Baalke, the GM, is under contract for, I think he might even be through 2016. So, that remains to be seen. I think Jim Harbaugh is a great coach, but, you know, when those types of things filter out of a building, usually there's something to it. And I think it was very frustrating for them last year to be denied in the NFC Championship game and then have to watch Seattle get there. So I think it's a big year for them. You know, they've been hovering around. They're arguably the best team in the league, really, over the last 3 years in whole. But they got to win a Super Bowl to really make it feel great. I think if they do, which they may be my pick this year, I like some of the moves they've made. I think they're a really good team. They're better on offense.
then I think everything works out. But if they haven't, you know, another year or two where you're knocking at the door without getting in, I question whether or not you know, that's going to be a sustainable arrangement for them with everybody they've currently got.
Mike Senda with us here from ESPN.com, the NFC West blog. Moving over to St. Louis, the Rams, you spent some time with them at their OTAs recently. How is everything going with Michael Sam?
You know, I actually haven't, I have not been out to the Rams. I did a number of other teams last week, but, you know, his name has really faded into the background because when you go out to there, you talk to people who are out there, including people in the organization, Aaron Donald, their first-round pick, is really the one who's looking great. I think Sam's like every other seventh-round pick, trying to find his way. We haven't heard as much about him because he's probably not going to be a huge factor for them on the field as a rookie this season. But, you know, the focus there is on Sam Bradford coming back from the ACL and then on Aaron Donald, their first-round pick, adding a ton to a defensive line that didn't need any help.
Mike, now, Jeff Fisher, of course, he is the type of coach that actually can get the most out of his players. And you're talking about Sam Bradford coming back from an injury. Is it too early, or would it be too early to say that these guys are actually a team that would contend in the NFC West?
I think they're going to be a tough out for everybody. But, you know, I'm not going to anoint them a contender yet because we don't know. Sam Bradford hasn't been able to stay on the field enough. And, you know, their left tackle, Jake Long's coming off in a big injury too. There's some questions in their secondary. You know, there's good young talent at wide receiver, but he hasn't done anything yet for the most part. So they are going to find out this season if those draft picks and if Bradford's ready. Until then, I think you just can't give him the benefit of the doubt. You know, this is, I saw somebody wrote the other day, you know, Sam Bradford's looking great in OTAs. Well, that's like the fifth year in a row he's looked great in OTAs. You know, they need him to look good in September, October, November, and December. And until he does, you know, let's be more realistic.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, he, you know, he definitely has, you know, to go out there and prove himself out on the football field before they can actually look at themselves as being an actual contender. I want to shift gears a little bit, you know, staying on the same line with quarterbacks. And you had talked about in one of your blogs the new offensive coordinators, kind of this carousel that's been going on in the NFL, and the biggest impact to quarterbacks. And for one, you were talking about Eli Manning and Joe Flacco. Let's talk about Joe Flacco getting his new offensive coordinator in Gary Kubiak. And, of course, Gary Kubiak being the head coach last year with the Houston Texans, having a quarterback in Matt Schaub. You know, how does Joe Flacco adapt to this Gary Kubiak type of a system?
You know, I don't picture Flacco as the type of guy who's going to be running a lot of naked bootlegs and stretching the perimeter. But so, you know, we'll see how much of that there is. And you have a head coach, too, in John Harbaugh, who has his own opinions and the way he wants to run offense. So there are people in the league who are saying, okay, you know, what percentage of this is really going to be Kubiak's show? I think it's going to be a high percent because Kubiak has been a head coach a long time. He's established. He's probably going to get to do things his way. And, you know, you talk to people in scouting, GMs, I mean, they'll tell you that Joe Flacco is a good athlete. And, he, you know, we kind of typecast him a little bit because he's a big, tall guy. But he tested well at the combine. He can move a little bit. So the key here to me is how much does that running game, you know, how much does Ray Rice benefit? Mm-hmm. I think if Ray Rice comes back to life in the Gary Kubiak sort of blocking scheme offense, that's going to really help Joe Flacco, because Flacco's like most quarterbacks. You know, he's not going to carry your team throwing the ball every down. They need help. They haven't had enough help. They didn't have enough help last year. Guys were hurt. The line was bad. You know, whatever was wrong with the scheme, it's hard to tell. But, you know, they're hopeful that Kubiak can come in, get that running game going, and all of a sudden Joe Flacco's job is easier and he's a better quarterback again.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think if, you know, Baltimore can come up with a solid running game that, you know, that would take a lot of the heat off of Joe Flacco. You know, like you were saying, as far as that mobility is concerned, I mean, that remains to be seen. I know that Joe can kind of, you know, move, shift to the left or the right to keep him, you know, keep himself balanced and get the throws and make all the throws. But as far as the mobility is concerned, yeah, that's a huge question mark. So out of all the offense coordinator changes, I mean, we're talking about Kubiak. You had mentioned in your article as well, you have Ben McAdoo, Ray Horton, with Tennessee, Kyle Shanahan in Cleveland, and Greg Williams in St. Louis, who's going to make the biggest impact with their ball club?
You know, I think it could look like it's going to be the Giants, because I just thought Eli Manning threw way more interceptions than he probably was going to this year, even if they kept Kevin Kilbride. So, you know, you make the change. It's always hard to tell after the change how much of the new things that happened differently were because of the coordinator. But I think at the end of the day, that's a situation where there's so much room for improvement. We've seen Eli Manning play better than he did last year. You've got to figure their offensive line's better. You know, they made a lot of moves this offseason, probably too many, you know, for most teams to handle in one offseason. But they had to do something. And I think Eli Manning will be better off in the system. They'll probably, you know, throw the ball a little shorter down the field, and that could be a benefit for him.
Mike Sando with us here on the Double with the Double S Express. You can see all of Mike's articles and blogs on ESPN.com. Hey, Mike, thanks for being on the show here, and we wish you continued success, and we'll see you down the road.
Hey, thanks very much.
Thanks for your time, Mike. No problem.
There goes Mike Sando, ESPN.com, covering all the NFL for the ESPN.com. Well, Sean, Wally, it has been a great show thus far.
Yeah, show 56 with, of course, Bay Area sports writer Paul Gackle joining us again, second or third time he's been on the show, and now Mike Sando of ESPN.com covering all things NFL.
So, yeah, definitely a great show. And, man, you know, I get excited when I talk about, you know, the NFL and, of course, the upcoming season. And, you know, Paul Gackle, you know, coming on and giving his great expertise. And, of course, ending it with Mike Sando. Another great show in the books, my friend.
That's how we do it here on the Double with the Double S Express. Be sure to tune in every Monday night, 7 p.m. Double-S-Express.com. Follow us on Twitter at Double S Express. Get a hold of us, email us, let us know what you think of the show, who you'd like to hear. Heck, you can even call the show as well. So many options, Mr. Boyd.
Yes. And you said show 56, is that correct? Is it 56?
56, if my math is right.
Oh, man. Show number 56 in the books. Whew. Well, it's been a great show, man. And, you know, we look forward to next week's show as well. And as Sean Wally, my partner, was saying, you know, be sure to check us out on double-s-express.com, or you can email us as well. For those of you here in Northern California, make sure that you are staying inside, staying cool, and avoiding the heat. And, of course, up there in the Pacific Northwest as well as in Eastern Washington, as it is starting to heat up and all over the country. For Sean Wally, I'm Sean Boyd. For Don Newsom, the engineer, you have been listening to On the Double with the Double S Express.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.